You are listening to a free podcast of The Majority Report with Sam Cedar. To support the show and receive nearly an hour extra material daily, become a member today at majority.fm. Resistance is futile.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar. It's time to look in the mirror, America. Do you like what you see?
I keep referring to Obama as the magic Negro.
Do you like what you see now?
Well, suck on this.
It's just a mirror, America.
Shared sacrifice by everybody.
What could it do to you except reflect your image?
I did nothing wrong at the Minneapolis airport.
The Majority Report.
Far more credible to me than PBS.
And Frontline.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
And I get the feeling you've been cheated.
It is Monday, July 11th, 2011. My name is Sam Cedar. This is The Majority Report. We are broadcasting live in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times building in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. Ladies and gentlemen, I sort of have to be quiet. I'm actually not in New York City. I'm actually in Washington, D.C. I am at the President's press conference that's taking place right now. Let me see if you can hear what I am hearing. Here it is. I'll see if I can just head my microphone over there. Okay, I got to be a little bit quiet.
The reason to include that potentially in this package is if you're going to take a bunch of tough votes, you might as well do it now, as opposed to trying to muster up the political will to get something done. Further down in the future,
President Obama has already
with
said
respect
that he's
to,
willing to take on some sacred cows.
A balanced
in other words,
package.
That's your retirement.
Is
your
the package
cows.
That we're talking
not
about
so
exactly
cows.
What I would want? No.
He's also said that he's
I might
willing
want
to
more
bend
revenues.
Over backwards
and
for the
fewer cuts to programs that benefit
bring them back to the table so that they
you know, middle class families that are trying to send their
all
kids to
together
college, or
cut
benefit,
our sacred cows.
All of us,
eat your
because
peas.
We're investing more in medical
said,
research.
Eat your peas.
I make no claims that somehow
before,
the
you end up
position
cat
that
food.
Speaker Boehner and I
get all the peas you can get inside your system now, because
but
later you're going to be eating
is that
cat food.
I'm willing to move
sorry.
In their direction in order
got,
to get something done.
I just got
and that's what
that.
Compromise
Someone
entails.
Keep it down.
We have a system of government in which everybody's got to give a little bit. Now, what I will say is that
I don't know exactly
the revenue
what the
components
have given
that we've
at this
discussed
point, but,
would be significant and would target folks who can most afford it.
So he wants the tax increases.
If we
of course,
don't
these
do
aren't going to come until
because
to
you may hear the argument
the whole
that,
this whole premise
why not just
is ridiculous.
All
of you people,
cuts.
This is not going to create
and we
jobs.
The revenue
yeah,
issues
you.
In the election.
Don't look at me that way.
You'll
whoa,
from,
whoa. Get your hands off of me. All I'm
is,
saying
is
this is not. Excuse me, Mr. President.
Revenues,
this will not create jobs.
To get the same amount of
there
savings,
is no confidence fairy.
You've got to have more cuts, which means that it's seniors or it's.
All right,
poor
you
kids,
know, I'm going to pod you down, sir, because I have a program to do.
Medical
I'm just going to turn my dial here on my microphone that is pointed towards you and keep talking into mine. Yes. Okay. So, folks, I am back from vacation. On the program today, we're going to be joined in just a moment by Brian Beutler. Hopefully he's not too pissed about missing this presser because he's got a report on it. But, you know, what are you going to do? I take a week off from vacation. Obama comes out and proposes cuts in Social Security. That's very clever. That's very convenient. Bonaire has walked away from the debt deal. Good. I hope there is no debt deal. I hope it just is raised based on the fact that we are constitutionally bound to meet our obligations. And Tim Geithner can say, like, I don't believe in that, even though a month and a half ago, apparently he was waving the Constitution at a Politico breakfast saying the 14th Amendment says we can't default. So regardless of what happens, Let me ask you one question, Sarah. You're with UPS, is that correct?
Yes.
What, do you care about the deficit? Are you concerned about the deficit in any way?
Well, if it affects future generations, you should care about the deficit.
Future generations? What's more important, do you think? Creating jobs right now or...
They both work hand in hand, so you need to create jobs. You also have to worry about future things. It's a conundrum. If you stop here, you got to begin there. If you begin here, you got to stop there. So there's no real answer for this.
It is a conundrum. He's right. It's right. Yeah, right. It's a conundrum. Thank you for...
Choosing UPS.
Oh, my pleasure. I didn't actually choose UPS. Somebody sent me something from there. All right, folks, we got to take a break. On the program today, Brian Beutler from Talking Points Memo. Then Elise Hoag from Media Matters will be talking about essentially the crumbling of the Murdoch empire. I mean, it's crumbling as we speak. I just got a late-breaking story that Murdoch, not only have they been tapping like 4,000 phones in Britain. They tried to tap the phones. We don't know if they were successful on victims of 9/11 families. And now, I just picked this up. There are mentions that Gordon Brown, was targeted. Former Prime Minister of Britain. I got to imagine that the authorities find that somewhat annoying to tap the phones. It's okay when they do it to us. That's okay. Because we could be terrorists. But those guys in charge of dropping all the bombs? Well, you can't. No. A lot of news, folks. Very happy to be back. We'll be back in just a second, hopefully with Brian Beutler. We are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report. Our next guest has graciously agreed to join us. He has ripped himself away from the Twitter machine and from live tweeting President Obama's press conference. He seems to be, my guess is, based upon his Twitter feed, he's probably pretty wasted right now. He's been playing a drinking game. And it looks to me that you're probably knee-deep in this.
I'm pretty wasted for 11:30 on a Monday.
Well, I appreciate you joining us, Brian Beutler. He is the senior congressional reporter from Talking Points Memo, and here to fill us in on the debt deal. I mean, this is obviously still a fairly moving target. I've been gone for the past week. There's been a lot of has there been anything that's really happened, or has this just been all theater on top of the basic theater that we're supposed to buy into the idea that somehow we're going to default?
Yeah, I mean, there's been if you've been gone for a week, you've missed like a series of escalating rounds of posturing, followed by late this weekend, sort of the capitulation that I think the White House was kind of hoping for, so that President Obama could go in front of the cameras today and talk about how, you know, he angered people in his own party to put forward this awesome debt-cutting package, and the Republicans said no because they're too wedded to keeping tax rates low on millionaires, and, you know, he gets to come out looking like the reasonable guy, but actually nothing has happened. You know, just as far as substantive developments, there's been actually no progress at all.
Which, in my estimation, based upon as one of those people whom he angered in his own partier, at least in terms of this side of the center line, as it were. I'm glad to see that. But let's talk about this. Let's take it back. So where are the different people, players in this? We know now that President Obama tried to offer a $4 trillion package, which would have reduced the debt, I guess, over 10 years, $4
yep.
trillion. Dollars. And that involved Social Security cuts. Tell us about that, because you wrote an interesting piece on the hidden Social Security cuts.
Right. Okay. So, there's still very little clarity about what he was putting forward in this $4 trillion package. So it's possible that there were other cuts to Social Security beyond this one that's kind of been floating among both Democratic and Republican economists for years now. But what it would do is tie the Social Security cost of living adjustment to a new formula. Currently, Social Security benefits increase based on one measure of inflation, and what people in the White House propose to do is change that measure of inflation to one that's a little bit less generous, so rises a little bit more slowly. And over time, that would mean a real benefit cut based, you know, relative to what people are promised in Social Security now. So you're not raising the retirement age, and you're not reducing the basic Social Security benefit. And so they can pretend that it's just this technical change. But if you add it up over the course of 10, 20, 30 years, you're talking about taking thousands of dollars that people, based on the current formula, can expect out of their pockets.
Yeah, in fact, you say that when you're looking at this over the course of a lifetime, it's a 4% cut, a 6.5% cut, and a 9.2% cut for retirees at ages 75, 85, and 95, respectively. So this is real money, and we are talking about nearly 70% of the American population who rely on Social Security for over 50% of their income as retirees.
Yep.
So and presumably your prospects to go out and earn more money diminish from age 75 to 95, right? I mean, you're not going to say like, okay, well, now that my Social Security has been cut by 10%, it's time for me to head to McDonald's. I'm 95. Maybe I can get a job there. That's just not going to happen.
Right. And there's another thing, too. So to get a little technical for a second, what they're talking about doing is changing the measure of inflation to something called change CPI. It's got actually a longer name than that, and the sort of economic quote-unquote science behind it suggests that it's a more reasonable representation of how people respond to inflation. So it's not just straight inflation. It says that when prices of goods go up, people don't just start paying more for them. They make changes in their purchasing habits. And I think that there's some truth to that among people who have the flexibility that you're talking about, who can go work a few more hours, or their needs are really flexible so they can eat different foods, or they're in good health. But seniors, they lose those they lose that flexibility over time.
Right. So the argument is like, okay, prices have gone up. You no longer will go shop at the Price Chopper. You'll go to Walmart. Well,
right.
I mean, if you're 80 years old, it may not be so easy for you to do that.
And if what you're spending most of your money on is medicine, then it doesn't really apply to you. You know,
right.
This formula is designed in aggregate, and Social Security is not for the aggregate population. It's for people over the age of, you know, in retirement. So
am I being...
it would hurt them more than it would hurt, you know, the chaining CPI would also lead to a de facto tax increase for workers. Would mean higher income tax rates. But there you're talking about a pool of people for whom it seems like the proper way to go about raising taxes and cutting benefits for seniors by doing the same change CPI. You're talking about a whole different population that lives by completely different means than workers do.
Brian, am I characterizing this fairly? Essentially, what it boils down to is that when they create this, when they work out this new formula for the way that we calculate inflation and the implications of inflation on retirees, essentially what they're saying is that people are sort of getting away with it right now. They're actually making a little bit more money than they should based upon their costs.
Right.
I mean, that's basically it, right? They're saying people are just living a little too high on the hog in retirement if they're relying on Social Security.
Yeah. In fact, there's an economist in the Obama administration. I think he's deputy to Gene Sperling, who's the top economic advisor in the White House. Before he entered the White House, he was an economist, I think, at the Brookings Institute or institution, and he testified before Congress in that capacity. And he talked about the current measures of inflation and Social Security and why you should change them to this new chain CPI, because he wanted to prevent, quote-unquote, de facto Social Security benefit increases. So what he's saying is they're getting it a little bit too good right now. Mm. And if we drop down to chain CPI to a lower level of inflation, then they'll be getting more like what we think they should be getting, which is, you know, just in absolute terms, less money.
Does anybody have any data on how many different P. Peterson swimming pools that Gene Sperling has taken a dip in? Is that public record, or where do we find such data?
You might be able to FOIA that at OMB or something like that.
Yeah. All right. So now the other story that I heard while I was vaguely on vacation, because I was with my family, so it's never truly a vacation, was that. What Obama was doing here was he was again sort of doing a Vulcan mind meld. He was there's a 12-dimensional chess. He was putting so much on the table that he was just setting up this very moment where he could say, "I'm the adult. I'm willing to throw Democrats and Democrat accomplishments and brand under the bus to show that I'm the adult here." Knowing full well that Bonaire is in no position to make a deal like this, do you think that's legitimate?
You know, I think that they saw from a political perspective, and I think God help us if he thinks that this is the right policy to pursue right now. But from a political perspective, he thought that this is sort of win-win. If he puts this out there and Boehner bites, then he gets to wedge Ben away from his caucus. He gets this big debt deal. He gets to look like the adult. And the leader who took this hunger in Washington for deficit reduction and took it the extra mile. And then if Boehner backs away, which is what ended up happening, then he gets a lot of those attendant political benefits without having to actually put Democrats and Republicans on the Hill in the position of voting for anything. So I don't know that it was that much like that clever of a political chess move, but I think that probably went into the thinking behind the trial balloon that they lobbed about $4 trillion in deficit reduction.
So where does, for instance, do you think Boehner has the ability to even make a deal? I mean, do you think he has the ability to actually make a deal that he could actually deliver his caucus at this point?
I think he's laid out some markers that he reportedly would be happy abandoning if he could get the votes. And those markers are he doesn't want any tax increases or increased tax revenue, I guess. They're a little bit fuzzy on the distinction between the two. He doesn't want to raise the debt limit by any more money than they cut in spending. So if you cut $2 trillion, you can only get up to $2 trillion in increased borrowing capacity. He wants to implement spending reforms that make it impossible or difficult for Congress to spend more money in the future. I don't think that he could guarantee Obama a deal that violated any one of those three precepts without either getting right up to the debt limit to where markets are roiling, and he has Wall Street and the Chamber of Commerce and all these conservative interest groups bearing down on his members to force them to vote the right way. But he can't promise a deal before then. He can't say to Obama, yes, I'd like to do more tax revenue, or I'd like to give you a big debt limit hike, even though we're only cutting $1 trillion. Because if he brought that back to his caucus, they would hammer him, they would reject him, and Eric Cantor would be standing right behind him with an axe. So
the president has just said in this press conference, though, that he will not accept a deal that doesn't have any revenue increases. Is that right? I mean, even if it's like a couple of years out. So.
He walked right up to that line. The one thing, I mean, and it's possible that I've missed it since we got on the phone. He issued a real veto threat on
short term increases.
Yeah, short term. And he suggested very strongly that that it, there would have to be a revenue component, no matter how big or small the deal. And if he did say no go without revenue, I missed it. But right now, Boehner's saying he can't get revenue. So
I mean, this is sort of fascinating because this whole thing is just theater, in my estimation. I mean, we're going to raise the debt ceiling. There seems to be constitutional authority for it. Even if Tim Geithner doesn't think there's constitutional authority for it, they could basically say the Department of Justice said that we have to meet our constitutional obligations. We need to pay this off.
Yeah, I mean, I wrote a piece last week with a colleague of mine on how this would work, and basically, you know, the Treasury Department and OMB would, offer the recommendations to the Justice Department, to the Office of Legal Counsel, who would issue a formal opinion to the White House on whether or not this was constitutional. And if they said yes, they could go ahead and do it, but they would be triggering, you know, all kinds of legal and political fights, and you know the fact that Geithner's deputy right now is basically saying we would recommend to the Justice Department not to do this suggests pretty strongly to me that they've actually.
But have you seen the video of Geithner at that Politico breakfast where he held out the Constitution? I mean, he was the first one, it seems, to have actually said it in public.
Yeah. My hunch is that he's sort of wishing he hadn't done that because
I bet.
I'm also with you on the idea that this is just going to happen, and that even, you know, even in the last 2 days we've seen John Boehner and Mitch McConnell say we don't know, you know, nobody as far as we know is talking about not raising the debt limit, so they know that it's got to get raised, and they're gonna that message will be reinforced to their members if. A week from now, a week and a half from now, there's still no deal, and investors start to get nervous about, about U.S. credit.
Let me ask you this. Okay, a final question here.
Uh-huh.
I believe, and tell me if you think this premise is wrong, I believe that the Republican Party feels that they cannot have anything that reeks of revenue increases, because if they do, Grover Norquist will go out there and call them all traitors. And on top of that, their Tea Party base. I mean, David Brooks is saying this kind of thing, essentially, that they're not even a real party anymore. They're just an amalgamation of people with insane ideas. They can't go back to these lunatics. Do you think, if that premise is correct, do you think that Obama feels that he can actually win politically just by making a deal? That it doesn't have to contain anything in it other than the fact that he can make a deal?
Ooh, that's a tough one. I can't come to a real answer on that based on what Obama has said publicly. He seems like he's
I mean, that's the central question, isn't it? Because that,
right.
I mean, that's where you know, that's where you find out where this goes. This is a game of chicken, and at the end of the day, if Obama believes that if I don't crash the car into the other car, then I win politically. If he believes that, then it's he's willing to give away anything.
Yeah, I mean, we'll find out in the end if he signs something that has zero revenue component in it. The sort of latest update on the behind the scenes machinations in these negotiations, they're looking for ways in which they can raise revenue in a somewhat progressive way, and offset it with a tax cut that's also has some progressive benefit to it. So the idea would be that you close a whole bunch of loopholes that benefit, you know, all the interest groups you've heard about, oil companies and hedge fund owners and so on and so on and so on. And you would put the, you know, several hundred billion dollars you get from closing those loopholes towards a permanent fix for the alternative minimum tax.
Mm-hmm.
Just to try not to get too technical, this is a feature of the tax code
The alternative minimum tax basically has crept up and is capturing more and more people in the middle class over the years.
Exactly. And so what Congress does every year is, without paying for it, lets a bunch of people in the middle and upper middle class off the hook for this. And they don't pay for that. And this what this deal would do is take several hundred billion dollars in tax revenue from rich interest groups and put it towards fixing that formula so that it didn't really continue to capture more and more people who can't afford to pay it. And that way, Republicans can go to Grover Norquist and say, "I didn't raise taxes on net. You know, we raised taxes on hedge fund managers to stop this AMT thing that you don't like as much as any of us don't like." And you know, Obama and the Democrats can say they got, you know, Republicans to blink on taxes and
everybody walks away thinking they're a winner.
Yeah, exactly.
But we should say it's necessary that at the end of this. No matter what happens, if the country's going to lose, if it's about if the end product is austerity, which it seems both sides now are, you know, hand in hand believing that the only way to prosperity is to cut government spending, which,
right,
of course, there's no one who actually believes that in the world of physics or economics.
Right. And I mean, so there's two issues. One is that if you have a big recession that tanks revenue and blows up deficits, if you then get a big bipartisan deal on reducing the deficit, you sort of reinforce this Hooverite notion that what you need to do in response to big deficits post recession is to scale back deficits. And if you do that in addition by rejecting the idea of increasing revenues, then you've reinforced the notion that the only way to bring deficits back into line is by cutting government services, not by taxing anybody. So it's sort of like a lose-lose-lose on policy if that's what happens, if there's a final deal.
There is a silver lining, though, to that, and that, of course, is that we may get a new run of Annie on Broadway, and that will be fun to go. No one will be able to afford to see it except for some of the upper ends of New York high society, but that's the one part that I think is going to be good coming out of this. We could get a whole new Broadway production of this next era that we're headed into. Brian Boyler from Talking Points Memo, thank you so much for joining us. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Sam.
We've got to take a break, folks. When we come back, we'll be talking to Elise Hoag from Media Matters on this whole Murdoch thing. Who knew? I go away for a couple days, and it's just the whole place goes to hell in a handbasket. The only people who lost this week were the raccoons, but I'll save that for the membership show. We'll be right back on the Majority Report.
It's black. So if you want me off your back, well, come on and let me know. Should I stay or should I go? Should I stay or should I go now? Should I stay or should I go now? If I go, there will be trouble. Decisions bugging me. If you don't want me, set me free. Exactly who I'm supposed to be. Don't you know which clothes even fit me? Come on and let me know. Should I cool it or should I blow?
We are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report on the phone. It is a pleasure to welcome to the program for the very first time, ladies and gentlemen, Elise Hoag, Senior Advisor to Media Matters of America. Here, Elise, I took vacation this week, and then as soon as I do that, it takes about 4 days, and then Murdoch goes out of business, it seems like. His whole empire is crumbling around him.
Well, maybe you should go on vacation more often, Sam, and we can get more justice in our media environment.
Seconded. I think this is the plan, folks. I've been sitting here yapping into this microphone, hoping that it would create change. All I need to do is go on vacation.
Actually, I wish his entire empire was imploding because we know what that would do for truth and justice here in the States. What we are seeing is that he's having to answer like never before for sort of the systematic perversion of the law and the truth that we've seen rampant through his entire empire. The News of the World, we think it's just the tip of the iceberg.
All right, well, wait a second. Let's back up for a second here, because tell us exactly how this broke, because a couple of days ago they shut down News of the World. What is News of the World, and why did they do it?
So News of the World is the oldest and most profitable newspaper in all of the UK. And what American listeners have to know is that the newspaper industry is still extremely profitable in the UK and, in fact, sets the agenda, much like our cable news does here in the US. So this is not an insignificant thing. Actually, claims have been coming forward since 2005 that News of the World reporters were actually breaking into people's voicemails. It was politicians, it was celebrities, it was sports figures to get a scoop on the next best tabloid story. They've tried to contain this time and again. I think the breaking point was last week when we found out that, in fact, News of the World had broken into the voicemail of a dead teenager. And in the process of trying to listen to the things that her friends and family were saying on her voicemail, they deleted messages, throwing the cops off the tail and giving her parents false hope that she was alive. I mean, obviously, if people are willing to forgive invasion of celebrities' privacies because they are, in fact, celebrities, breaking into a dead girl's voicemail hit a universal note that made people stand up and say, where does this stop?
Is this explicitly illegal in Britain or anywhere for that matter?
Well, yeah, the laws in Britain are a little bit different in the UK, and that's one of the ways they were sort of skirting this. First, they started to say, oh, it's just a couple of rogue reporters, and then obviously the practice was so widespread that they had to admit that it was just all through News of the World, and now we're seeing allegations with their other newspaper, The Sun. What is illegal and what's critical for people to understand is that reporters were also paying policemen for tips. And that is not only illegal in the UK, because News Corp is a U.S. listed company, that's illegal in the U.S. under the Foreign Corrupt Practices Act, and the DOJ can and should investigate.
Yeah, in fact, I mean, there was a story of some movie producers. I can't remember what the movie was, but they paid off officials, I think it was in Thailand, to shoot a movie there. I can't remember what movie it was, and they ended up going to jail, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is something that our Department of Justice has a history of taking very, very seriously, and they should. I mean, we're living in a world where corporate power has, you know, allowed our banking executives to get off scot-free while people are losing their homes, and this is really no different. I mean, it's critical that the Department of Justice and Congress, for that matter, make sure that all laws were followed, including making sure that U.S. citizens weren't spied on in the same way they were in the U.K.
And we also have a situation where apparently the News of the World tried to hack into the cell phones of victims on 9/11. Is that right?
Well, we're following that story very closely. Right now it's in the Mirror, and a New York City cop has apparently come forward and said that News of the World reporters tried to pay him to get the phone records of 9/11 victims so they could do the same thing here. We don't know enough to know whether those allegations are true, but we do know it's another data point that just calls for our officials to investigate so that we know whether or not the privacy of U.S. citizens were violated.
And it also just broke that the News International papers targeted Gordon Brown. And, like, literally, I know you've just seen the headline, but, I mean, this seems to be just sort of cascading. That's how they found out that his child had cystic fibrosis. Now, with all this stuff happening, what is Murdoch doing? I mean, obviously, shutting down News of the World is sort of an admission that there's a big, big problem. Is he trying to basically, you know, chop off a limb so that he can save the trunk here?
Yeah, we think that that's right. And in fact, we think shutting down News of the World raises more questions than it answers, because that is a radical move, and it comes at great expense to the shareholders, let's be clear. Now, one of the interesting parts of this story is that his son and heir to the throne, James Murdoch, who now resides in the U.S. and is slated to become the head of News Corp once his father retires, was very involved in the News of the World scandals and, in fact, approved payments to some of the victims to get them to, you know, settle. And, you know, whether or not he is culpable is a critical case to be examined, and that's where criminal charges could come against him in the U.S.
Right. That's the that Foreign Corrupt Practices Act is not just something that levies a fine against the corporation. It actually goes after specific individuals in the leadership of the company.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, it kind of never ends, because Les Hinton, who was in charge of the first investigation when he was at News of the World to see if, in fact, these claims were true.
Now, just to clarify, Les Hinton was the CEO at the time, and he did an internal investigation of, they investigated himself, essentially, investigated the...
He did. It was a little fox and hen house thing going on.
Right, and he found...
He determined no wrongdoing. Well,
shocking.
Then Murdoch promoted him to be CEO of Dow Jones, which now runs the Wall Street Journal, as we know. So, you know, this should come as no shock to your listeners, who I'm sure are very used to the lies and deceit that are pervasive at Fox News. Look, this is just showing that it goes through the entire company, that Murdoch and News Corp cannot be expected to behave like good corporate citizens and put their shareholders and the public welfare ahead of their own personal and political agenda.
Now, are we to believe that this was just contained in Britain, that this company just, like, you know, despite the fact that we know they send executives and reporters and mid-management people over from Britain to the United States to work on Fox, are we to believe that this didn't happen here? Because I recall a story that I read, probably only because it was in our local papers upstate, that Roger Ailes was doing sort of weird stuff like this in Putnam County because he had a newspaper or something. Do you know anything about that story?
Absolutely. I mean, look, Roger Ailes had appropriated News Corp investigators to tail a small-town newspaper editor who Ailes believed was working against him. Ailes owned the newspaper, fired the editor, and then believed that the editor was talking bad about him and trying to undermine his control of the newspaper. He took News Corp investigators and had them tail this guy, right? Now, obviously, we know Roger Ailes is paranoid, but the question is, why didn't anyone asked the question about why News Corp investigators were put on a private U.S. citizen? One conclusion is that this practice was so rampant through the company that it didn't even raise an eyebrow.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I mean, do you have any sense? I mean, why would we believe that they would go about this type of practice in Britain? And if it's true that they actually tried to approach a New York City cop, why would we believe that just the British wing of this corporation did it? I mean, for gosh sakes, if this is what got them to number one in Britain, why wouldn't they try and do this to get to number one in the United States?
Well, I think less and less people are believing that this was contained to the UK. I mean, News of the World had stringers in LA at the time that this was going on, and we assume that those stringers were steeped in the same corporate practices as the mothership back in the UK. Additionally, you know, Murdoch runs the New York Post, Page Six is famous for getting the scoops. And I think it's also important for people to remember that, you know, spying on U.S. citizens is not that different than having a Washington editor at Fox News make up lies about the president's relationship to socialism and directing his news anchors to report it on the air. This is all part of a systematic pattern of mismanagement and politicizing a news organization.
Yeah, you're talking about Bill Salmon, right? And
yeah, I am.
Those memos that were uncovered that showed that he did exactly that. Well,
absolutely. So we see it as part and parcel. You know, one of the things I keep saying is, oh, they tried the rotten apple excuse with one reporter. Well, then it became so many reporters. They're trying the rotten apple excuse on this one newspaper. But we know the whole barrel when it comes to Murdoch's empire is disintegrating from the inside out.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, you know, I live in apple country, and the whole thing about one bad apple doesn't spoil the whole bunch, that's actually a myth. When you have one bad apple, it actually it spreads. And in fact, when you put them all together, this is why you should never keep all your apples and many of your fruits combined in an airtight thing, because they emit a gas that ripens the stuff too quickly and rots it all.
Well, I am a city girl, so I'll have to trust you on the veracity of the apple claim. But what I will tell you is that, you know, Murdoch is obviously the most egregious example of how too much control over media, you know, erodes the basic standards of trust in journalism that we expect in the U.S. And one of the things we need to look at is the FCC rules that have lifted the cap in ownership and made it easier and easier for a few people to control all of the news that our citizens hear.
Right, and the bottom line is when the FCC says we can allow this type of control of our media, we're basically saying we trust these people.
Yeah, and the thing is, it's such a disconnect because most Americans, based on their experience with Fox News, don't trust these people.
Right.
And we all know that a functioning democracy is really dependent on having a diversity of voices, which is why we're so glad you're out there, Sam.
Oh, well, thank you, Elise. Thank you so much for taking some time to talk to us today. Elise Hoag from Media Matters, folks. We got to go.
Thanks.
Bye, Elise.
Thanks,
thank
Sam.
You.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
All right, folks. Wow. Wow, that show flew by. I got all these stories. I guess I'll have to tell only the members of these stories. Only the members will hear these stories, not the rest of you. You can go try and hack into somebody's voicemail account to find out about these stories as I relate them to these people, and then they, for some reason, talk about it on their voicemail with somebody else, if you know who those people are. See all the trouble you have to go to find out these stories, or you could just become a member. I know you're buying your coffee at justcoffee.coop because you're getting 10% off on your coupon code if you're using the word majority. And on top of that, I know you're buying your crap at Amazon. That Amazon program could end any day. They did it for people in California. So, please, support the show while you can. It costs you nothing. Later this week, we'll have more guests. I don't know who. We'll see. Doesn't matter, I'm back. Coming up in the post show, it is done, ladies and gentlemen. It is done. The raccoon of Perviator 2000 has been built. It is in full effect. Nikki took some video. I'll be posting that this week. I don't know if I'll go into the woes that I'm having with my daughter at the moment. She's sharing a little too much. Her health is fine. Her health is fine. Not mentally, but physically. And that's it. All right, folks. You can IM me at Majority FM, or you can, what do you call me? Call me at 646-257-3920. We'll be right back with the flip side.